This week, United Airlines said goodbye to the Boeing 747 with a farewell flight from San Francisco to Hawaii, recalling the flight the first United 747 took back in 1970. To pay tribute, the flight attendants' uniforms, the menu, and entertainment all had a 70s theme. One passenger took the opportunity to propose to his girlfriend, who said yes. United's flight was sold out within hours, a sign of the devotion that many aviation fans have for the plane once called the Queen of the Skies. Delta is also retiring the 747 this year, which means no North American passenger airline will be operating the 747. In January, I spoke with Clive Irving, the aviation correspondent for The Daily Beast and author of the book Wide Body, The Triumph of the 747. We spoke by Skype, and I asked him why these airlines were retiring the 747.
This all goes down to one thing, that when an airline looks at an airplane now, when they look at buying a new airplane, they're not actually looking at an airplane, they're looking at a business plan, business model, actually. They want the most efficient combination of several things. They want a set number of passengers to go a set distance. And that's a fairly demanding equation these days. So basically, Boeing have been very smart, and they've made their own plane obsolescent, if not obsolete, by producing a version of the slightly smaller 777, the Boeing 777, that's far more fuel efficient over virtually the same distances as a 747, carries slightly fewer people. The 777 being a much more modern plane, therefore it's much more fuel efficient. So the numbers make a lot of sense.
So it's a more fuel efficient plane. Could they have made a new version, though, of the 747 that would be more fuel efficient and still have that little, iconic second floor hump in the front of the plane?
Yeah, isn't that a wonderful part of the character? Yeah. The plane has a very identifiable and recognizable profile. Well, they did actually make a later version called the 747-8, which was produced 5 or 6 years ago. They hoped that they could compete with their own 777, and it turned out that they couldn't. So that latest version of the 747 is going to end up as a cargo carrier, basically. That's what it's being sold as, and not as a passenger plane. It's all about size. You've got three sizes of planes. You've got the 777 and the Airbus A350, which are long-haul planes carrying around 400 people, going up to, say, 6,000 or 7,000 miles in distance. Then below them, you've got another category, which is by far the largest category, which is the single aisle, because the ones I've just mentioned are all wide bodies. You go down to 185 to 200 people, which is split between Airbus with the A320 and 321 and Boeing with the 737. And I'll tell you something fascinating about the 737 in a minute. And then below that, you've got a category which Boeing and Airbus, which is basically a duopoly, planes with 108 to 130 seats. Now, the fascinating thing about the 737, which is the largest money spinner Boeing has ever made, was it was designed by the same people at the same time as the 747 in the late 1960s. And it turned out to be an amazing cash cow. They keep adapting it, making it slightly larger, putting more efficient engines on it. So you've got a contrast between one plane, which is the 747, which is absolutely a game changer in long-haul international flying, and another one which is sort of much more modest and unsung, which is in fact Boeing's biggest money spinner.
Well, you also have the 747 as the plane for Air Force One. This is the plane that the president flies on. What was so special about it that it became the gold standard, at least for the president of the United States?
Well, it became the gold standard for everybody, really, in terms of safety and comfort. It's not exaggerating to say that the 747 transformed the whole idea of flying around the world, because when it was introduced, it was a third more fuel efficient than what had gone before it. And it was the first plane really to democratize. It introduced something entirely new to the human experience, which was the economic availability of international air travel to large numbers of people. So in that sense, it's been an enormous force for good, for people experiencing other countries and other cultures. It was a machine for doing that. And it can't be overestimated, the effect that plane had. And then, as you said, it was a kind of, almost had a personality of its own when it nosed towards the airport gate and you saw that great bulbous upper deck there. Actually, obviously, I've written a book about it, so I know it quite intimately. I still feel when I go aboard it that it's very special. There's nothing else quite like it.
What's going to be the thing you'll miss most about the 747?
Ah, that's a very good question. I think just the feel of its personality. It's so rock solid and stable. When it comes into land, for example, it looks as though it's flying about 50 miles an hour because it's so big, it's actually flying 150 miles an hour. And I just think there are very few machines these days, cars or planes, that you can develop a personal attachment to. And I still think it's possible to do that with the 747.
That's Clive Irving, aviation correspondent for the Daily Beast and author of the book Wide Body, The Triumph of the 747. Clive, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And we spoke in January. United flew its last 747 flight this week.